Welcome, dear hunters, managers, and enthusiasts. This is Deer University, the podcast of the Mississippi State University Deer Lab. My name is Bronson Strickland.
And I'm Steve Damaris. Bronson and I are professors of wildlife management and co-directors of the MSU Deer Lab. Together, we've researched deer across the United States for more than 40 years. In our podcasts, we explain the why and how of deer management based on science, whether it's research we've conducted or explaining research done elsewhere. We'll offer you a college course in the science of deer management.
But don't let Steve scare you. This isn't going to be a review of calculus or chemistry. Instead, we take results of research, reduce it to what's important, and explain how you can apply research to management. So join us for this episode of Deer University. Welcome back to Deer University, and today we are continuing our discussion on when to call and when not to call. More specifically, Steve, what we would call it is when should you engage in selective harvest or when you should not, or what are the good sides, what are the bad sides, and really fully explaining what selective harvest is. Steve, hopefully we put the last nail in the coffin in the last episode for culling and or selective harvest for the purpose of improving herd genetics. And we listed a lot of reasons for that. And I don't know if we need to go back into that now or review that because we covered it so well in the last episode. Today we want to move more into what we call standing crop management or using selective harvest. Selective harvest being we are targeting specific individuals that, in this case, bucks, that possess certain attributes, in this case, antler size, and we're either going to choose or select to harvest them or to not harvest them. That's kind of our rationale for selective harvest. Now, I gave a definition last time of what the standing crop is. That's kind of my working definition. Why don't you, as a refresher here for the audience, maybe why don't you give everyone your definition of what the standing crop is.
Okay, sure thing. Like you said, Bronson, there are cohorts that are produced each year, and within a given year, there's a series of cohorts living on a property. So, you know, this coming hunting season in 2017, there'll be the fawn cohort, there'll be the yearling or 1.5 cohort, 2.5-year-old cohort, 3.5-year-old cohort, 4.5, and on to, you know, throughout maturity and till you run out of animals from old age. So there's these cohorts, and then, so they're kind of a mini population within the population of bucks. And each of these cohorts has a set of physical characteristics that describe them. And in a selective harvest for antler management, we want to emphasize certainly the antler characteristics. And within any population or a cohort, there's going to be a range of variation in antler characteristics. And what us, you know, nerds like to refer to as a distribution of antler sizes.
All right, let's explain what a distribution is. You know, in biology, Steve, I guess probably the most common that everybody knows is what we would call, or statistician would call, a normal distribution. The everyday term would be a bell curve.
I like to use human analogies. And if I could jump in and talk about adult men, and in this case, we're just human men in the United States. So we're calling all adult men as a cohort, for example. The average adult man is about 5'9", 5'9.5". And about 20 to 25% of the adult men in the United States are average height, 5'9.5". And if you go to an inch higher than that, you get, you know, 5'10.5", you're going to have about 20, maybe as low as 15% of men that are going to be 5'10.5". And you go to the other side, there'll be about 15% of the men are going to be 5'8.5". And the percentage of the male population that is shorter than 5'8.5" or taller than 5'10.5" decreases with distance from the mean. So, you know, there aren't many 6'1", and there aren't, you know, there's a relatively low percentage of men that are 6'1 or 6'2 and certainly 6'3. And there's a low percentage of men that are 5'5", 5'4", 5'3". So there's this distribution of...
And when you say mean, height. You mean the average.
Yes, 5'9" and a half is the average height of men, and it's a bell-shaped curve.
So you could say if 5'9 is the average, and you went plus or minus 2 or 3 inches, within that range, plus 2 or 3 inches and minus 2 or 3 inches, you will have a majority of the men in the United States are going to fall within that range there.
Yes.
However, there are a few individuals that are well below average, and there are a few individuals that are really above average. And it's really easy for us, especially if you watch sports, to really think about those above average. And we think of there's very, very few men that are 6'5".
That's right.
Let's call that a 150.
Okay.
Equivalent of a 150. There's even fewer men that are 7 foot tall.
Absolutely.
If you're 7 foot tall and you have any athleticism whatsoever, you got yourself a job in the NBA, right?
That's right.
But there are very, very few 7 foot men. That's probably like a 180 class, Buck, or maybe even more than that. There's just very, very few of them.
Yeah.
So when you look at their representation in this bell-shaped curve, we see that most individuals are grouped around the average. Some are a little above, some are a little below, but there's very, very few individuals that are drastically below average, and very few individuals that are drastically above average. That is our bell-shaped curve. And antlers follow the exact same distribution, have the exact same type of variation.
Yeah, and we might generalize and say about 60% of the population is going to be average plus or minus a few inches, and about 20% of the population are going to be, you know, well above average, and 20% are going to be well below average.
And that's at every age class. So let's make a distinction. For there, we were lumping men. That would be like in this case, we're lumping bucks that are 5.5 years of age or older, or mature bucks.
Absolutely.
But kind of like Steve, if you remember, you brought this up in the last episode, if you were the ninth grade basketball coach and you were looking at that distribution, and you had some of those that were really, really tall in ninth grade. So that same distribution applies when we were in junior high and when we were in high school. That same distribution applies to bucks when they're 1 year of age. Not as much, but it does a little.
Yes.
Especially 2 years of age, and then really at 3 and 4 and 5, you see this beautiful distribution of antler characteristics. Very, very few are really, really high scoring. Very, very few are really low scoring. Most of them are average.
Yes. All right. So Bronson, as you just said, we've got this antler size distribution of a population, and most are average. Some are well below average. Some are well above average. And so there's a distribution of antler characteristics. Let me be the tough guy here and say, so what? What does that get us?
Okay, tough guy. I'm going to tough guy you right back. It depends on what our objectives are, where that gets us.
Okay.
So,
give it to me.
Okay. So, it can mean absolutely nothing. If you don't care about if deer density isn't a problem, if food is unlimited, and it never is unlimited, it will at some point be limited. But you may have these distributions of antlers at each age class, and it really not matter because, hey, we only harvest mature bucks. We're going to harvest every single mature buck, and some of them are going to be below average, and some will be above average, and that's fine. Most people have to consider that along the way for two reasons, either because of density, I need to take some mouths off the range. I need to, you know, a mature buck can eat over a ton of forage every single year. That's a big deal.
Yes.
And so if you have a buck that is 3 or 4 years of age and you can tell he's in, as far as the distribution of antler sizes is concerned, he's well below average, why feed him a ton of food? So have a great recreational opportunity. A buck with below average antlers is just as fun to hunt and they taste just as good. So if you are striving for maximizing the greatest amount of food that I can allocate to bucks that have the greatest amount of promise to grow into a trophy or a buck that's on the right-hand side of the bell curve, we're going to have some fun and take some of those lower antler size or below average bucks out of the population. And so it just, you can just develop a system then of making harvest decisions at 3 years of age, sometimes two, but usually more like three, and certainly at four, where you can start taking some of those bucks out of the population and allow the ones that show the greatest opportunity to grow into something special, give them more food and give them another year or two to live. And so I certainly think, so I'll speak for me and not you, I certainly think that's the most efficient way to manage a deer herd when we want to maximize antler size, if that is our goal.
Well, I happen to agree with you. I think that's a great answer. And it's kind of the key to our approach to buck management.
Yeah, that's kind of our system that we recommend. You know, Steve, you watch your money every now and again, don't you?
I mean,
sure. You just don't blow your money. Yeah. Have you ever heard of this guy on the radio called Dave Ramsey?
Yes.
He does. You know,
smart guy.
Yeah. What's that system called? It's probably trademarked and patented and all that, so I probably shouldn't say it. But he has this very, very simple but effective system of get out of debt.
Yeah.
Save money. Don't have credit cards, et cetera, but his bottom line is get out of debt, save, and then save your money and all that sort of thing. That has proven to be both mathematically, logically, and with experience, that is an effective way for you to plan for your future and to save money. Now, at the same time, you might meet with a financial advisor that knows a little bit more than we do about finances and the system and so forth, and they might say, yeah, that is a very effective system. There's no way it won't work. But I can probably tell you how to tweak it here, tweak it there. You could probably deviate from Dave Ramsey's system here and there and get there quicker. Now, there's a lot of people that can't do that. They don't have the knowledge or experience to manage money like that.
Yeah.
But some people do. And so I use that a lot as, if you are managing for high quality, older age bucks, you don't have to harvest younger age bucks. You don't have to engage in selective harvest at the younger age classes. You can let them all get old and just harvest mature bucks. That'll work.
Absolutely.
But it might be a little inefficient. It also might mean that you are producing food with your habitat management, with your food plot management, things like that. A lot of your food resources are also going to a bad bet. They're going to bucks that probably aren't going to be what you want them to be if your primary goal is to maximize antler size on the property.
Absolutely. And something that comes along with that is, you know, every hunter is going to be making some decisions when they look at a buck. They're going to say, yeah, I think he's mature, but he doesn't have as large antlers as I would like. And so they're going to pass on that buck. And so this is where the inefficiency comes with that program, is you tend to focus on harvesting the better antlered bucks at maturity and give the lower quality antlers another year in the hope that they're going to, maybe they're going to improve with time. And that's the inefficiency of, you know, the Dave Ramsey system, trying to look to the future and improve it over that basic approach.
Yeah. So there's certainly not as quickly.
Yeah.
Not improving it as quickly.
And you and I have seen so many properties that have been degraded by years and years of too many deer. and habitat quality is so critical. And when you produce high quality forage, you want to treasure it to some extent. And you don't want to be losing it to animals that aren't going to make you happy at the end.
So let's use for our audience that are either foresters or has some appreciation for forestry and knowledge of forestry, that they have a classic term for that process. So, Steve, if we were to enter a forest, and within that forest, just like deer, there's going to be a distribution of tree quality, right?
Absolutely.
Some of them are going to be high dollar trees. The species and the shape of it are high dollar. There's going to be also some that are lower quality. Either the species isn't as desirable or the shape or form of that tree isn't desirable. Now, if I go through there and I remove only the high quality trees and leave the low quality trees to grow up and I come back 10 years later or 20 years later, what's the term, Steve, that I have done to that timber stand?
I have now high graded the timber stand.
You have high graded the stand. You have taken the best and left the rest. So you took the best performing animals from a deer management standpoint, or in this case, trees, and you've left the rest. So Steve, what you're talking about there is with our deer herd is a form of high grading.
Yes.
So a lot of times you see at 3 years of age and start getting into 4 years of age, the best individuals are selected and the lower quality individuals are left to grow to maturity.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's inefficiency, and we're wasting the critically important nutritional resources of a property on animals that, you know, are not going to fulfill your objectives. And again, as we said earlier, you said clearly it's all about the objectives of the property. Mm-hmm. If they just want to harvest deer and not worry about the quality and the investment in terms of nutritional resources, shoot deer.
Have fun.
Yeah.
It's your resource to enjoy.
Yeah. If you want to shoot yearling bucks, no problem.
Yeah.
It's absolutely an acceptable management approach to shoot a yearling buck.
So Steve, high grading, let me go back to Dave Ramsey one more time and then I'll put it to bed. But, That would be, Dave Ramsey would say, you are financially shooting yourselves in the foot. If you take those bucks that are 3 years of age, three is just a good age class to where this begins. If you take those best ones, those were your high performing stocks. You know, that's where your money was going to make the most money for you, and you cashed it in way too early.
Yeah.
But the plate, you either stayed in debt, for example, or the places where your money wasn't getting you hardly any return on investment, you keep in those for another 5, 10, 20 years. And so you underperform of where you could be.
Yeah.
So the first step, Steve, when we work with somebody is that recognize that you need to protect the bucks that show the most promise. And if you just do that, that's a big victory.
Absolutely.
And then if you want to go one step beyond, it's like Dave Ramsey says this, but I got a buddy that's a financial advisor and I can maybe speed it up or be a little bit more efficient. Then you start having a selective harvest towards those lower quality bucks at the middle age classes. Then you really become super efficient. Mm-hmm. And you're doing it because you want to remove them from the gene pool, right?
No.
No gene pool.
Nailed that last
time. All right, that's right. So
we're just managing the standing crop.
We're improving the cohort. We're improving the cohort. That's right.
Now, before we, this is a really simple concept, but there's a lot of nitty gritty details, and we'll have to talk more and more about this, over our podcasts, and we've got some other educational materials in development to help people with the nitty gritty. This concept that we're talking about, this approach to managing the standing crop of a buck population, let me just step back and make sure people understand. Under what kind of circumstances might someone want to consider implementing this approach?
I would say you can't even consider this approach until you know how to age bucks on the hoof, right?
Absolutely.
So, until you are able, and this could be aging bucks on the hoof live, like instantaneously, I see that buck and I've got to make a harvest decision. Or now with trail cameras, a lot of people have a very good feel for the bucks that are on their property. And so if they're very rigorous about getting a lot of trail cameras out, getting a lot of pictures, you can make some of these harvest decisions beforehand. And you can determine, hey, this is a 3 or 4 year old buck and he is really below average. This is one we should harvest. Or more importantly, it could be, hey, this is a 3 year old buck. Oh my gosh, beautiful set of antlers. He is going to be something special. Let everybody you hunt with know, hey, or your neighbors too, we're protecting this buck. Let's see what he does at 5 years of age, because he's really going to be something special. So for it to work, it all hinges upon being able to age deer on the hoof.
Absolutely. That's one of the critical requirements. Now, let's help people understand, is that 100% accurate?
Never. Just like tooth wear and replacement. Just like cementum annuli, if you were to send it into a lab. None of it is 100%, but you have some pretty good confidence. Pretty good confidence that you're going to hit the mark within a year or two once you know what you're doing with some experience.
Yeah, because what we're really talking about is, you know, young bucks, middle-aged bucks, and mature bucks.
Yeah. That's the way to group it most effectively.
Yeah.
It's really not that big of a deal if it was 3 or 4, because it could be a really above-average 3-year-old. You know, even his body may be above average. It could be a below-average 4-year-old. But bottom line, he's still middle-aged. You need to get him to 5 or 6 when he's mature.
If he's better quality.
If he's better quality. If it's one you want to spare. That's right.
So how does a group of hunters or a landowner know what average is on their property?
I would say if you're a new hunter to the area, you're probably going to have to rely on trail camera information. You might want to, if it were me and I were going, let's just say out of the blue, I'm going to go get a lease in Kansas or East Texas or wherever. I'm going to visit my state wildlife agency for one thing. I'm going to visit the deer biologists that work for that state wildlife agency, and hopefully they have some data for my county or region to kind of say, this is average or this is below average. And then I may also, if I know people in the area, you know, that I trust that have been hunting that area, what's the average for this area? Mm-hmm. And then specifically what I'm going to do on my property, you know, I'm going to use trail cameras. I'm going to start to figure out what those distributions are.
What about from a population demographics, you know, kind of the status of the population? What do we need to worry about there?
Well, I would do a camera survey. If I want to look at the status of the population in terms of what is the age structure, what are the, you know, demographics would be a way to say it. Yeah, I'm going to conduct a camera survey where I can look at that type of stuff.
Yeah, and part of that result of that camera survey, that learning about your deer population, you need to determine, you know, do you even have an adequate buck age structure to work with? And do you have too many deer? So where you want to make sure you're conserving those nutritional resources. It's, you know, it's part, again, I'm trying to step back and make sure people understand that what we're talking about with our selective harvest program isn't for everybody. You need to have adequate buck populations, adequate cohort populations to work with before you start tinkering with lopping off some of them at younger age classes.
One way I say that, Steve, when I'm working with people is I put it on a continuum or I put it on 4 steps, 1, 2, 3, 4. Step one is don't worry about managing for bucks per se or as much until you get the deer density under control. So get that herd of density under control, because if you don't have any food, managing for trophy bucks or above average bucks is really, you know, you're wasting time and effort. Number one is the density. Number two is you got to start working on buck age structure. You can't have big bucks if you don't have older bucks, plain and simple. Number three is when you can, and some people that lease property can't do this as much, but if it's a place that you own or have the flexibility, you need to start managing habitat. So now let's start working on that food. And most everybody can have at least supplemental food plots. Let's start working on food. And then when you have the density, the age structure, and food under control, now is when you really start to capitalize on selective harvest, if you choose to go that route. So you're exactly right. There are a lot of situations where this isn't going to be feasible because there's a lot of this you can't control. But in places where you can, or you have cooperation from your neighbors, like-minded neighbors, and y'all want to accomplish the same thing, that's typically step four after you've accomplished, you know, density, age structure, habitat.
Okay. So we've identified three real important considerations. One, hunters can age and want to age and make harvest decisions about the bucks. There's knowledge about the cohort antler size distribution for the area. You have an adequate buck population and good quality habitat. And I think that's really important to reemphasize what you mentioned earlier in this podcast is, you know, you just have hunters that really want to increase the average size of harvested mature bucks. If they're just happy with all of the mature bucks that they're harvesting, even the lower quality within a cohort, again, quality, we're talking about smaller antlers. We're not saying the animal doesn't have qualities, but within the antler size distribution, he's on the left side of the average.
He's on the small side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if the hunters are happy with that, then
go for it.
Yeah. Don't even worry about this. So those are the kind of the four things that if you don't answer yes to those four things, then don't listen to the rest of this podcast.
Yeah, let me add to that too, Steve. We don't want people to think this is what is driving what we want. We're responding through years and years and years of listening to the hunting public that typically they want to know more information about how to manage for older age bucks and higher quality bucks. I personally, and I think you're the same way, I'm delighted to kill a mature buck, period. I don't care if his antlers are below average, or above average. Oh yeah, you know, I would choose to have one above average, absolutely. But I am just as delighted. The hunt is just as good and fulfilling to me if he's 5 or 6 years old. Doesn't matter what his antlers are.
Mm-hmm.
So that is absolutely fine. But again, just as a response to people we work with, you know, often they want to know, what are we doing wrong?
That's right.
And often it's this selective harvest. And not in the good way, but in the bad way.
That's right. In terms of
high grading.
Yeah, and we've had so many participants in our deer workshops around the Southeast and want to improve the harvest quality. They're frustrated. And so that's why we've developed this system that we're going to try to help people understand. So what if you apply this approach, this selective buck harvest, what are some of the positive impacts down the road?
The immediate impact is you have removed animals from the range. You have conserved food. That's the immediate effect. You've conserved food. You haven't improved the gene pool. You haven't done anything like that. So you are essentially making an investment right there. You have taken this 3 or 4 year old buck that's eating a ton or greater food a year, and now you're going to have the opportunity to kind of reallocate that food. So those higher quality foods can go to the bucks that you're investing in. And let's not forget also to the does, which we want them in the best possible condition. And that's another episode we've got coming up here on what's in it for the mother. You know, it's not what my mom ate and it's what my grandmother ate, but that has a big impact on the quality of these bucks. So that's kind of the immediate effect. And then over time, if you are systematically removing these bucks that are lower quality, then you end up with a population or a series of cohorts that have above average antlers. And it's not because of genetics. Again, it's not because you've done any genetic manipulation whatsoever. You've just allowed the bucks that have above average antlers, you've allowed them to stay in the population and grow old.
Yeah. And, you know, back to the nutrition thing, you mentioned earlier a ton of feed being eaten. Well, there are properties that I'm aware of, even here in Mississippi, where, you know, a mature buck is 200 to 250 pounds. And a buck that size, he's eating 2 tons a year. And that's a lot of feed. you know, and what we're talking about is 2 tons of wet, you know, green vegetation.
Yeah, that could be food plots, that can be blackberry, that could be acorns, you know, but yeah, all those foods that are gonna sustain the population. We want them focused in the right direction.
So we talk a lot about antler selective harvest and managing the buck population, but it all comes down to nutrition, ultimately. If you don't have good nutrition, then you're wasting your time.
All right, Steve, let's go back in time a little bit when you and I really started focusing on this. We really started focusing on this because of a problem. It was a perceived problem at the time, and then through our research with the Mississippi Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Parks, we found out that indeed this is a phenomenon that's going on, and it is the problem of high grading. And what we found out in Mississippi, just like in a lot of other states, when you have an antler regulation or a rule, in Mississippi it was called the 4-point rule. And what that simply means is that in Mississippi at that time, it means that a buck must have 4 points or more to be eligible for harvest. Now, some more commonly now might be 4 points on a side, or, you know, my 6-point rule. It goes on and on and on. But at this time, it was called the 4-point rule. And what we started to wonder was that, gosh, there are a lot of yearling bucks in Mississippi. I shouldn't say a lot. There wasn't a lot. It wasn't like half of them. But the very best, maybe that top 20% mm-hmm. of yearling bucks had 4 or more points. And when you have a 4-point rule, and typically, what are the dumbest animals in the woods?
Yeah.
What are the easiest bucks to kill?
1.5.
1.5-year-old yearling bucks. So now we have this cohort of yearling bucks roaming around the woods that are easy to kill. And there's about, depending on where you were in Mississippi, 10%, 20%, 30% of them have 4 points. And those bucks get harvested. And then all the bucks with 3 points or 2 points are allowed to live. We have taken the best and left the rest. So just like we talked about a moment ago, at 3 years of age, this was systematic and widespread at the yearling age class.
By regulation.
And so, Steve, if you remember, and you might have to dig in the cobwebs here, this was a few years ago.
Yeah, back
this was in the 90s.
1990s, yeah.
Yeah. But what we showed is that in these areas within Mississippi where we sampled and where the harvest rate was significant, where there was a lot of bucks being harvested, we noticed that before the regulation and after the regulation, there was a significant difference in the antler quality of 3.5-year-old bucks.
Absolutely. And I like to refer to it as the 4-point rule shot off about 10 inches of Boone and Crockett score. And even in the 2-year-old bucks, 2- and 3-year-old bucks on average were about 10 inches smaller after the state implemented the 4-point regulation compared to those same age bucks prior to the 4-point regulation. And so this regulated high grading at the state level had some really significant negative impacts on the standing crop of cohorts after that selection was implemented at the yearling age class.
Here's what's cool about it, though, is I think you said it, Steve, in one of the few episodes about Mother Nature kind of protects, you know, the bucks, and it's hard to screw it up.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's hard to improve it.
That's right.
But once that rule was changed, it goes right back to normal.
Absolutely.
There were no genetic effects. There wasn't these long-term effects of high grading and, oh my gosh, we've messed up the deer herd. No. In a couple of years, you're right back to where you were.
That's right. You have a new cohort produced each year, and they can bring up the new resources.
And Steve, probably one of the most gratifying aspects of this was, again, we have a wonderful state wildlife agency and a progressive state wildlife agency, and they took this research to heart. You know, it was their research, too. It was their brainchild as well, working with us, And because of this, the regulation was changed in Mississippi a few years later.
That's right. And let me step back to that mid-1990s regulatory change that implemented the four-point rule. Just to, let's just clarify. Our biologist friends here in Mississippi at the time, they didn't even recommend that regulation. That was a legislated rule. The biologists didn't have any say in that. So some of the biologists were also concerned right from the get-go. So with our research, our cooperative research, we were able to prove that, yeah, this wasn't such a great idea. Antler regulations are put into effect for one goal.
Age structure.
That's right.
Yeah, to improve age structure via protecting younger age bucks.
And so conceptually, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
You want to protect young bucks. The problem lies in where you draw that line within a cohort or an age that you apply. Okay, this antler characteristic and below is going to be protected, and this above that line is going to be eligible for harvest. The four-point rule in Mississippi protected anywhere from up to 95% of the bucks, the yearling bucks, the 1.5-year-old bucks in some of the lower quality soil regions, but then only about 50 or 60% of the bucks in some of the better quality soil regions. And so there was this high grading impact by harvesting the best and leaving the rest. So the regulatory agency, our friends in the agency, recognized that the four-point rule was a problem. And so they implemented a fix. How about you describe the fix?
Well, we got to be honest about this too, but because this is what I preach. There is not in any way, shape, or form, has been or will be, any time you invoke some type of regulation, meaning that this size of antler can be protected and this size of antler can be harvested, you will do good some of the time, you will do bad some of the time. And that is because the bell curve.
Yes.
That's because at every single age class, you have below average, average, and above average. So easy numbers here. Let's just say we're going to use a 18-inch beam. Any deer with 18-inch beam or under 18-inch beam is going to be protected. Well, that's going to do a darn good job to accomplish the main goal to improve age structure. Because bucks don't come out of the womb with 18-inch beams. They have to grow into that. But at whatever age class you start reaching 18-inch beams, there are going to be some younger age bucks that are above average. Like with men that are really, really tall. They're going to get harvested. There's going to be some that are well below that that won't ever have an 18-inch beam, and they get protected. So most of the time it works, and it sure works a heck of a lot better in Mississippi now than it did with the four-point rule, because now we have multiple criteria. You know, we have a spread and a beam length. And so generally, you have fewer of these mistakes where a really, really high-quality young buck gets harvested.
Yes, and I agree 100% with you. The fix that the agency made was to totally protect all the yearlings. But there was strong political and hunter support for some type of antler regulation. And so what they did was they incorporated, actually, you know, some of our products from our research projects to look at the percentages of the bucks that were being protected at different ages based on their antler criteria. And they came up with specific beam length and inside spread that would protect all of the yearlings. But again, like the four-point rule, and like you just said, you know, the current beam criteria, spread criteria, will only protect a percentage of the two-year-old bucks. And so you still have high grading.
Mm-hmm.
But now we, you know, they pushed the problem later so that we have more older bucks.
Right, right.
You know,
it's better to high grade at older ages than younger ages.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's never good, it's never perfect, it's never what you want, but by gosh, if you had to choose one, I would rather high grade it at an older age class.
That's right.
Than right out of the gate that very first year, taking the top 20 or 30% of the yearling cohort out.
Yeah, and our friends, our biologist friends with the agency, they understand this.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're dealing with a general public, and they're trying to regulate protection of younger bucks.
Right. And they're, Steve, let's mention this, they're the same way. And that's what's been so good about Mississippi and so progressive about them is, yeah, there's this fundamental desire where most of the hunting public, they want some older age bucks in the population. But they also give people the flexibility with their regulations to manage it how you want to.
That's right.
So if you want to harvest what is state legal, by gosh, you go right ahead, have fun, it's your resource. If you want to be more protective and manage for really older age bucks and really high quality, they have a framework with the state regulations as well as DMAP, the Deer Management Assistance Program, whereby their expertise, they can steer people in the right direction to do so.
Yeah. And these antler-based selective harvest criteria that are regulated are actually very common in the eastern United States. There's probably 15 or 16 states in the eastern part of the country that have some type of antler regulation that protects younger animals based on some critical antler characteristic, some size.
So let's wrap it up here, Steve. Selective harvest has been around a long time in terms of whether it's selective harvest for does versus bucks in terms of sex ratio. What we typically think of nowadays anyway, selective harvest, is really referring to what type or kind of buck you're harvesting. And you're not going to do anything about genetics in a free-ranging herd, at least not in your lifetime.
That's right.
Okay, Steve, we've covered a lot of ground in the last two episodes, and we hope that we have clarified a lot of misconceptions. I know everybody doesn't have these misconceptions, but I know a lot of them do because we've met them over the years and we continue to meet them over the years. The take-home messages are, number one, selective harvest has been around for a long time. It is one of the primary tools of managers or hunters. And in terms of a hunter being a manager, selective harvest is a tool for management. Historically, it might be selective harvest as we're targeting more does or we're targeting more bucks. More recently, selective harvest is really referring to what types of bucks are being harvested. Now, point number two is selective harvest does nothing to improve genetics. There is no such thing as culling for genetics. Do you agree with that take-home point?
I am nodding, and you can't. Nobody can see me nodding, but yes, I am, and I'm even smiling.
And the last one is that if you have hunters that, of course, they are interested in incorporating selective harvest for a reason of improving the standing crop, or let's say it this way too, if they're interested in improving the standing crop, or they just don't want to high grade, they just don't want to shoot themselves in the foot in terms of the quality of bucks, they have to learn how to age bucks on the hoof. They have to have a good working knowledge of that. Steve, it just so happens, I don't know if you knew this or not, but you developed a publication on aging deer on the hoof about 15 plus years ago.
Yes, I did.
Do you have a recollection of
yes.
that? Yes. Yeah. You can find that on our website, msudeerlab.com. It is there for download, beautiful pictures, free for download. And then we also developed an app. Unfortunately, it's only on Apple phones or iOS devices right now, but it takes that information that was in your publication years ago, and you can put it right on your phone or your tablet and scroll through and compare and contrast the body characteristics of different age class bucks. But that is critical. If you're going to even worry about selective harvest, you got to know what you're selecting for. And so you have to learn how to age deer on the hoof. Anything else, Steve, before we wrap this up?
Well, let's put a plug in for those that are learned by visual and seeing. MSUDeerLab.com. There's some good material on there talking about antler size distributions. So they can see a distribution and what we're talking about within a cohort.
That's right. We do have some good examples on there. And we'll certainly develop that a little bit more in future episodes. And we've been talking about some videos that we're going to post online too. So now that I'm saying this on the podcast, Steve, it's got to be done.
It's going to happen.
So you can get on that next week.
Next week.
Okay, everyone. Thank you so much for joining in today. And as always, go to our website. You can learn a lot more about deer biology and management. And go to our Deer University page. Click on that. And if you have a question about this that maybe we can follow up with in a subsequent episode, or maybe you have a topic we want to devote an entire episode to, let us know. See you next time on Deer University. We're glad you joined us today and hope you learned something valuable about deer management. If you have questions about this podcast or a question about a topic we haven't discussed, please log on to msudeerlab.com, click on the Deer University tab, and send us your questions. We'll get to them as soon as possible. In closing, we want to thank our employers, the Mississippi State University Extension Service and the Forest and Wildlife Research Center. We also want to thank the St. John and Dudley Hutchinson families for their endowments that support deer research and education.